equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Noon, I'm Carl Ittner, today's host for Equal Time Radio and your Monday host in general. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. I've got a blog on the same subject. It's called Relocalizing Vermont. It's at the Vermont Commons website, vtcommons.org/blog, or just go to the homepage, vtcommons.org, and click on the blog link. I'm about a dozen or so different bloggers there, so look for mine, which are beginning Relocalizing Vermont. And of course, you can get audio from this show usually by the end of the next afternoon, the end of Tuesday afternoon. It's posted. It's now posted at equaltimeradio.com. Travin, the Tuesday host, also posts his audio at the same website, equaltimeradio.com. Got a great show coming up for you today. Carl Russell, he farms in Bethel, and he's a member of Rural Vermont's Board of Directors. He'll let us know about the state of play of various bills in the legislature that are affecting the fate of family farmers and support industry for family farmers, like the compost industry here. First off, though, we're going to talk with Tom Whipple. He writes a peak oil column for the Falls Church Press News. He recently proposed that U.S. car companies should immediately stop producing cars that get less than 30 miles per gallon. He also said that they should, within a very short time, ramp up production of only cars that get 100 miles per gallon or more. They've done it before on a test basis, and they can do it on a full-scale basis. That's what he proposes. Do you agree? You can call in during this segment and all segments here on Equal Time. 244-1777 is the local phone number, and if you're calling from afar, the toll-free number is 877-291-8255. Now, I'm trying to get the word out on peak oil to let people know that probably last year the world produced more oil than it will ever produce again through a combination of economic and geological factors. I'm trying to do that to motivate people and policymakers to prepare both individually and also on the state level to get the state in a situation where we are ready for a time when we have much less oil available to us than we do right now. We're heading in that direction, and we need to have started making preparations 20 years ago. In some ways we did. We need to greatly accelerate the pace of those. And for me, it's a real honor to have Tom Whipple on the show. He was on once last year, I believe, because Tom has been writing a column on peak oil every week for his local newspaper for over 4 years now. Plus, he writes regular updates. He's got a weekly update for ASPO, the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, the USA chapter of that, and he usually fills that in with a midweek update on his update. And plus, he just knows a whole lot more about the subject than I do. So I'm glad to welcome back Tom Whipple to the show. Tom, how are you?
Very well. Thank you for the kind introduction.
Good to have you here. Well, tell us, I outlined your proposal about stopping making cars that produce less than 30 miles per gallon immediately. Could you justify that for our listeners who haven't read your column?
I think it's rather easy to do.
Sure.
It's clear as a bell that world oil production probably reached its all-time high last year. It's been dropping rather sharply since then. This, of course, is mainly by demand. Whether or not the industry could keep it going or not is one thing. However, the more important factor is the industry or exploration and drilling for new oil has dropped like a brick. It is way, way, way down. This simply means that there, 2 or 3 years from now, there's going to be an awful lot less oil available, whether there's demand for it or not. So no matter what happens to the economy, there's going to be an awful lot less oil available. And I simply think that given the current travails of the automobile industry, it's about time that we simply stop making large vehicles that consume just too darn much fuel. For example, we now have about 250 million licensed two-axle vehicles in the United States, and we have about 200 million drivers. So we probably have about 50 million more vehicles than we have drivers for them around. This is just absolutely absurd. These vehicles have many, many years of life left in them. I know we in America, we've gotten the habit of scrapping the darn things after 10 years. With a little, you know, tender, loving care, enough spare parts, they'll go on for 30 or 40 years. Cars in Cuba certainly did. And I guess absolutely no question this is time to really start going back. Every new large, you know, V8 car we build is just wasting more of the resources for our grandchildren, and it's going to make it harder and harder to transition to something else. We're going to need all that energy, you know, to start building other, you know, we'll call it the green economy someday, you know, windmills and power dams and that sort of thing. And it makes absolutely no sense to keep cranking these things out when you don't need them.
So as I understand it, you foresee such a drop in world oil production over the next decades that we'll be getting less and less use.
Precipitous drop.
Pardon?
It'll be a very precipitous drop.
Right.
So starting about 3 or 4 years from now.
So we'll be getting less and less use out of the vehicles we have, think it makes any sense to make more vehicles like that.
Exactly. You know, if you cut the use of them down 50%, they're going to last a good bit longer. Most of them will, you know, most of them get worn out by driving them around, not by just sitting there.
Hmm.
And, you know, considering if the average car went down from 15,000 a year to 6,000 or 7,000 a year, the other things would probably last twice as long. You'd probably get 20, 30, 40 years out of them. It's clear as a bell 20 or 30 or 40 years from now. There's simply not going to be enough oil around to support, you know, the private automobile.
Hmm.
Those around will probably be, you know, for highly important uses such as ambulances and fire trucks and police cars and that sort of thing. And it's just simply not going to be a common form, you know, especially with large, you know, gasoline engines in them.
Now, you're down in Virginia, is that right?
I'm in Virginia, that's right, yes.
And you mentioned Cuba as well, where they have 50-year-old or more
vehicles. Certainly. Remember, we put the embargo on them back in 1961 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been getting along with the same bunch of cars for nigh on 50 years now.
Right.
They have. And they've kept them going. You take a look at pictures from that. They're still running around.
You find all those great
1950 Chevrolets running around.
Right.
Somebody figured out how to make them go keep going that long. I'm sure we can figure out how to make them go that long, too.
What I think about up here in Vermont is that we have cold winters, and to keep our roads open during the winter, we put a lot of salt on the roads. It gets spent to the undersides of the cars.
Bodies up and that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we'll just have to transfer them up from the south then. That's what we'll do. We'll just have to redistribute the whole fleet in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what capitalism, the economy, does. If there's more demand for them in Vermont, somebody will ship them up from Vermont from Mississippi or somewhere.
Right. And I know that some people right now go down south looking for the used vehicles for that reason.
Sure, that sort of thing. But, you know, basically, that's one idea. Another suggestion of the whole thing is maybe somebody could start looking into converting some of the cars we have. We have a massive investment in our car fleet, our 250 million cars here, just absolutely massive. And there's no reason why these things necessarily have to have large, inefficient engines in them. You know, I would suspect for a fraction of the cost of building yourself a new, you know, a new car, one could simply re-engine it, re-gear it with a far more efficient engine. You know, take a V8 down to a 4 or something. Take a V8 down to a 4 with a, you know, electric hybrid on it. Put batteries in the trunk or something. People are already looking, this is pickup. Pickup's an excellent thing to put batteries in the back of. You put a whole layer of batteries in there, and away you go.
That way you don't have to carry around concrete blocks for the traction.
Don't carry concrete blocks around, exactly. Just put a layer of batteries in there. There's all sorts of things we can do.
Mm.
There's all sorts of things that the Detroit industry can do to make this country a lot more efficient. Mm. You know, if you said some of these factories that were about to shut down, you know, in Detroit, you know, send them to, you know, building conversion kits or something. They're simply converting the cars, move them back to the factory and reconvert them.
Mm.
Maybe try to be more efficient.
The top management in Detroit has proved surprisingly willing to ignore suggestions along these lines.
They keep saying people won't buy them.
Right.
And I suspect right now they're absolutely 100% right. You took a survey, Dal. How many people would bring their car in and convert it from a V8 to a three or four cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
The response would be probably measured in the fractions of a decimal point, that sort of thing. However, you know, when you know, the problem right now is gasoline is cheap. It's back down to $2 a gallon or so. And nobody particularly sees any, you know, the reason to do this. Mm. And people are sort of expecting this is going to go on for a long time. It's, you know, and it's going to go, it may go on for a while here. If the economy, you know, economic situation gets worse, you may see, you know, gasoline back at $1.50 again before the year's out.
So with the automakers on the ropes, then what sort of leverage does that give the government,
That's the question. Does the federal government put the screws on this sort of thing? Congress could certainly do this if Congress saw the need for it.
Mm.
However, I suspect Congress's constituents do not see the need for it right now.
Right.
You know, Congress could simply, you know, set, you know, they set 30 miles per gallon. You know, remember, they fought for years over trying to move the corporate average fuel economy up to 30 miles per gallon.
Mm.
I think it's technically possible to move this thing up to the hundreds right now. People are already playing around with designs that could do this sort of thing, and mostly some flavors of hybrids and that sort of thing.
Yeah, Amory Lovins for a long time has talked about the hypercar, which can get 100 miles per gallon by drastically downsizing it.
Well, they're playing with these. You know, the thing, the Aptera thing out there playing with, that three-wheel thing floats around with, they were looking at a couple hundred miles per gallon in that.
Wow.
It's a highly aerodynamic car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even with the, you know, the gasoline engine running, they were looking at a couple hundred miles per gallon.
Mm.
So these things are technically possible. We're not, it's going to take a few years to convert to them, but I would think that within a few years, one could easily start, you know, A, converting the car fleet we have now from getting, you know, 15 to 20 miles per gallon up to getting something somewhere north of 30 miles per gallon just by, you know, building some hybrid, you know, building some plug-in electric capability into them. And you could also start turning out cars and we'll be getting 100 or 200 miles a gallon.
Mm.
This sort of thing, but so far we're, you know, the most imagination we seem to have is to, you know, bring in the Italians with some small Fiats or something. I don't know.
Right. So you get the classic problem here of needing to make change in, well, this isn't even the very long term. This is the way you're talking about it, with a precipitous drop in world oil production.
I think you're looking within 5 years.
5 years.
I think you're looking within 5 years is probably going to be on it. Because what you're going to find yourself with is, you know, the price of gasoline is just going to get up to the point it's going to be unaffordable for most people. I don't know what unaffordable is. We all have our price, but, you know, it may be $4 or $5. And you can name any number you want. You name $10 or $20. At a certain point, it just simply becomes unaffordable for the way we use cars now.
But right now, as you said, it's around $2 a gallon.
Yeah.
People aren't interested in doing this.
How
does the government or how does anybody, a private entrepreneur with deep pockets who wants to anticipate market need, stimulate this demand or get production moving in this direction?
Well, I suspect it's probably more a governmental thing. I suspect you're probably going to need, you know, congressional hearings and some of this sort of stuff. Right now, I cannot see where the administration really has taken aboard the notion that, you know, there are going to be oil shortages somewhere in the near future. The current administration seems to be, you know, very, very big on global warming. They're doing all sorts of things to cut emissions or trying to cap carbon and this sort of thing. But I have not seen a loud and clear statement that somewhere in the next, you know, let's say 5-10 years, it's going to, you know, the whole picture of availability of, you know, gasoline is going to change markedly.
My reading, you look at this stuff more closely than I do, Tom Whipple, but my reading is that we got clearer statements that the world was perhaps at peak oil from George Bush last year than we've gotten from Barack Obama. Do you agree?
I think you may be right, that sort of thing. So they really have not addressed the issue publicly in any loud and clear fashion.
Hmm.
That sort of thing. We get the impression the Secretary of Energy, you know, from somewhat cryptic statements he's made, he seems to be giving us the impression that it's 30 or 40 years away, the problem is, before real shortages develop.
Whereas last year, about this time, or maybe a little earlier, George W. Bush was saying about Saudi Arabia, they aren't increasing their oil production right now, but maybe that's because they can't.
Yeah.
And he made a number of other statements.
I know. They most have the message. There's no secret about this thing. You know, various congressmen went into George W. Bush and told him exactly what was happening. It's not a secret.
Right.
He knew it. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not any politician wants to publicly admit this, mainly because it's a very devastating message.
Mm.
It implies all, you know, major economic change.
Mm.
And a lot more than people usually, most of us don't want to contemplate this. It'll be sort of a wrenching change to our lifestyles.
We're talking with Tom Whipple. He writes a weekly column in a Virginia newspaper on peak oil. He also writes for the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, the Peak Oil Review, every week with often updates in the middle of the week. If you want to chat with him about future oil production, about car production, and anything else related to this, give us a call. The local number in the Waterbury area, 244-1777. The toll-free number, 877-291-8255. Tom, did you get a chance to see this recent posting by Kurt Cobb on the oil drum about a mass media message for peak oil?
I saw the reference to this morning. I haven't read it yet. I didn't read the whole thing deeply. I noticed it this morning that it was up there.
Okay, well,
that sort of thing.
Sorry I didn't warn you. I was going to ask you about it. But basically, he was saying that there hasn't been much breakthrough in the mass media of consciousness of peak oil, just as you were talking about for the Obama administration. We haven't heard much out of them. And he suggests that a number of people nationally get together and try to get on the same page for some very simple message, maybe just saying, look, oil production is going to drastically decrease in the future, and leave it at that, without talking about the various approaches that people have to dealing with that, from techno-utopia with electrification of everything to relocalization of everything. What do you think of that?
Well, it may be. I don't know. I personally, having been working on this problem for 4 or 5 years now, almost full time, talked to lots and lots of people, politicians, Capitol Hill, everywhere else, and I have just sort of come to despair. I don't think we're going to get the message through to people. You simply cannot warn people that something is going to happen. They have to experience it.
Mm.
Last summer, we were an awful lot closer to experiencing it when we saw the $4 gasoline in the United States and $5 in California than we ever were before.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, think we're going to have to get back a lot closer to that. And they'll go through the silly season again about blaming it on speculators and blaming it on environmentalists for not drilling, et cetera, et cetera. If it stays up there for 6 months, a year, it's going to sink into somebody.
Mm.
They're going to have to make some fairly radical changes in our lifestyles. And, the number one radical change is just conservation. You're going to have to, More things like mandatory carpools, less use of the personal car. And, of course, one way to do that is simply get the price up there.
Mm-hmm.
People keep suggesting, much higher gasoline taxes, and they just get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just totally a non-starter in the American, political scene today. Even a couple of cents is a non-starter, much less, the several dollars they have in Europe.
Right.
They make it effective. I just think we're going to have to go, basically over the cliff. To drive right up the cliff, go over it, as we start plummeting down from the cliff, people get the messages and start changing behaviors.
Lurch from crisis to crisis.
That sort of thing. That's about where it is now. Right now, we've got this week is the automobile crisis. The year now trying to dope out what that means.
Mm.
I can see a lot of serious fallout from the automobile industry crisis here right now. If this thing, isn't handled just right, and I see an awful lot of ways it could come off the track. You could end up with no GM, Chrysler, or parts manufacturers in the country in another 6 months, which could lead to all sorts of dire consequences. Basically, of course, would be probably another major drop in the demand for oil in the United States, which would keep the price down.
Right.
For another months, years. Don't know. Just too complicated. The whole thing is such a complicated interlock problem. It's awful hard to think your way through this whole thing.
Right.
What's going to happen? There's too many repercussions, and we're surprised all the time.
Part of your recent proposal, as I recall, on changing the way the car companies do business is to stimulate production of 100 mile per gallon more cars, not only by requiring it, but also by placing lots of orders for government
well,
and
that's,
requiring
that's one
all government
do,
contractors
the governments
to do.
Can certainly do that quite easily. They can easily, if you want 100 mile per gallon cars, just let the federal government and all the state governments and everything dependent on them. The military, the Pentagon, all the state governments, put out RFPs for them.
Mm-hmm.
Say, given a reasonable amount of time to do this thing, we're not going to do this. We're not going to buy them without it.
If you get enough of those RFPs out there, then they can start cranking up assembly
lines. The government's carrying increasingly piece of the bill. If the government pays for more stuff, they're carrying increasing clout. Just look at what they did to Chrysler and ARP and everything else over the other day.
And the head of GM.
It'd be very easy. They could probably do it administratively. The Obama administration could probably put out a piece of paper saying the government's not going to buy anything. It doesn't get, pick some number for you, whatever somebody tells them is practical. 40 or 50 miles per gallon. Everybody's got to start buying, you know, driving around in, you know, small, highly efficient cars.
Mm-hmm.
The government could do all sorts of things. The government could require carpools. They could do all sorts of things.
Mm.
You could just simply by, you know, when you look at the number of people that are either government employees or government contractors in the country, you really, you know, take in a large swath of the economy, probably 25 or 30% or more the economy, and they can certainly do this sort of thing. They can simply, you know, say, hey, if you're coming to work at a government job, it's going to be in a carpool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right there.
If you're going to fly your corporate jet to Washington.
You're going to fly your corporate jet, et cetera. That's exactly what. Just like they managed to embarrass everybody out of corporate jets. I understand the corporate jet industry is just about totally gone in America.
Hmm.
That sort of thing. They simply killed it. They're all being taken out to Arizona and left to rot out there now.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants one after that. So we shall see.
Right.
But no, the government does have a lot of clout. You know, even administratively, it's got a lot of clout.
We're going to go to the phones now, Tom.
Okay,
we're going to go to Williston, where Shelley's on the line. Hello, Shelley. We seem to have lost Shelley.